It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, our Pirate preview. It's the Pirates on the road in Orlando this Saturday night against UCF. And with us right now, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
What's going on, dude? Sitting out here in the parking lot of San Jones Barbecue, waiting to go in and eat.
All right, Emily, that's a good thing. Hey, anytime you can eat barbecue, that's a good thing. I wish I could. Lost 5 pounds on my diet so far, so please eat some more for me. Bubba, what's up, dude?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm ready to see some Pirate football after a long break.
It's hard to believe, and then it's going to be ultimately for the U.S. F game for homecoming, 23 days from the time we've played the home game, so that's hard to believe. But this week, we focus on the first Florida school, that's UCF, and we've got a great show with we got three great guests today, Bubba, right?
Right. We're going to be catching up with Jeff Allen. Jeff's with the Nightline Sports Network. He also does the AAC report, does a fantastic job with that, so definitely check that out. It's available on SoundCloud, I know for sure, and I can't recall where else it's available, but also we'll catch up with Jason Beatty. Jason's been on the show at least two or three times. We've talked to him, I know, last year during football and men's basketball as well, so we'll catch up with Jason, and then we'll also hear from Dale Steele. Dale Steele's the director of football administration right now under Coach Houston, and this is his third stint in East Carolina. He also served under Steve Logan and prior to that Bill Lewis, and then also the last three years of the Ruff and McNeil era.
A great guest. All three of them are, and appreciate them coming on. Let's do a roundtable before we go to our first guest. You guys, I know the line we were just talking about before came on still pretty strong. I was hoping to see that line go down, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Well, it's gone down a little. It opened at 34, and it's fluctuated between 32 and 33.5. So hopefully the Knights won't cover the line, and we'll make it a ball game. I don't see us winning it, but the kind of you could argue the line's a little high. I wouldn't touch it. Me and Bubba were talking about that. If you're going to, you know, your gut tells you to take the Pirates with the points, but I really wouldn't touch it. We'll get into the scores later, what our predictions will be. I'm going to have us covering the line, but if I'm a betting man, I wouldn't touch it. What about you, Bubba?
Yeah, I wouldn't touch it either. That's what, like you said, it would not surprise me if we make it a relatively competitive ball game compared to what most folks will think. I mean, maybe 42-21, something like that. Who knows? But yeah, I would not touch it because it would also not surprise me if they did cover it.
Yeah, really. I like the Pirates, but I think one of the issues what comes down to our reputation from last year, and plus you could argue with the offense that hasn't been scoring a lot of points. So that would be we got to score more points to win games.
I think it's two things. I think it's one is our offense, and two, I think it's just the talent difference between UCF and East Carolina. UCF is an extremely talented football team. It's winning a lot of ball games and hasn't lost at home since 2016. So,
yeah.
You know, the line, I think it has more to do with UCF than it does us, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, they're going to be upset, obviously, coming off the Cincinnati game. Really angry, I'm sure, two close games, but we'll see how that plays out. I know that one thing is the recruiting for us has been tremendous. So I would say to UCF and the UCF fans and the people in the league, enjoy beating us now because eventually we'll be able to beat them.
Yeah, Coach is doing a great job recruiting. It's going to take time. But we're building it the right way, and you know, getting good high school talent. And I'm sure there'll be some junior college players coming in. We're going to catch up on talent. It's going to take time because he's doing a great job recruiting. He's doing it the right way, going the high school route. I'm sure there'll be some JUCOs and some transfers coming in. But, you know, it's going to take a while to get up to that level of talent. And what we got to do right now is kind of play left-handed and try to out-coach them. What do you think, Bubba?
Yeah, and we're obviously playing shorthanded. I mean, we actually talked about one of the quotes by the broadcast team for that Temple game. I sent it to you guys. I was going back and watching some of that ball game, and because obviously I was there that Thursday night, so I hadn't seen it yet. But he was just talking about the discrepancy in the size and athleticism and so forth, and just being on the field before the game, it was glaringly obvious just that. The Temple had much more talent and size and so forth than we do at this point. So that's something to certainly keep in mind on Saturday, because obviously, like Coach Houston said, and this is the most talented team in the league in his opinion, and if nothing else, they're right there at the top if they're not the most talented.
No, I think they are. I think they are. I think Cincinnati's got a really good team, but the best team in the league. But I think UCF's more talented. UCF's just got so much speed. What I don't want, Bubba, is going into homecoming in a game against USF, which I think is really important. I think it's a game that we do have a chance to pull off the upset and beat the Bulls here in Greenville in a couple weeks, or next weekend, I guess, as it is now. But I don't want – if things do get out of hand this week, let's say, you know, we do lose by 34 points or more, I hope the fan base doesn't get too down in the mouth and, you know, say Coach Houston doesn't know what he's doing, it's the same old mess. And, you know, I hope guys stay positive because, you know, it's year one and there's still a lot to play for no matter what happens this Saturday. There's a lot of ball left to be played. We already got three wins. So anything now – is improvement on the previous couple years.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm sure you'll have those folks, that faction. I think you're always going to, but I think a lot of folks as well understand what the situation is and will be reasonable regardless of how things take place on Saturday night. And that's something hopefully it will be a competitive ball game, and maybe it'll be like last year where the game is in doubt there in the second half. That would certainly be something that would create a lot of momentum for the team as well as the fans and going into USF. But something as far as this matchup, Kyle, that's what a couple of the big things to watch. It's been well documented, just our lack of depth in our defensive front with the tempo at which UCF plays. It'll be very interesting to see how we handle that because that's something we haven't seen a ton of to this point in the season.
No, we haven't. I guess maybe, you know, maybe, well, I guess they don't necessarily do tempo. I guess William and Mary, Bubba, would be the most tempo team we've seen with their unique offense. We stifled them. You know, unfortunately, that won't be the case Saturday against UCF just because of talent. But, Bubba, why don't we go ahead and go to one of our guests now? We spoke with Jeff Allen. You want to go to him now?
Yeah, let's go ahead and go to that interview with Jeff Allen of the Nightline Sports Network, and we'll talk to him right now.
Well, it seems like forever, Bubba, since we played football, but this next guest we have, we're excited to have him back on.
Absolutely. It's great to finally be back in game week mode. And then now we're very excited to have a guy on our show for the first time. We've been on his show a few times now. And welcome Jeff Allen to the Sports Objective Podcast.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. It's an exciting week as the Pirates are going down to Orlando, your neck of the woods. And get your take on. There's been a bye week, obviously, with UCF. I know there was I'm sure they're disappointed to lose to a great Cincinnati team, but what's the mood down? I guess that's the best place to start. What's the mood like down there in this off week?
Well, the bye week probably came at a very good time, and the mood is interesting for the Johnny-come-lately bandwagon fans. You know, they think Josh Heupel should be fired already, which is absolutely crazy. Now, that's not a big sector, but there's voices out there saying that. Certainly it's disappointing. The Knights were hoping to be 6-0 at this point, not 4-2. But they lost to two teams on the road in very close ball games. And, you know, it's a different scenario for them now. You know, we've been spoiled down here the last 2 years, going undefeated, you know, with two consecutive regular seasons. So to go undefeated for a third straight year was going to be a tall order to begin with. And then to even consider going undefeated in the conference for a third straight year, also a very tall order. So, you know, we're, you know, the breaks that we were getting in the last 2 years have kind of gone the other way a little bit. So, you know, life kind of evens out, doesn't it?
No doubt about it. And, Jeff, as you look at things, and yes, the Knights have lost a couple of football games. Both of those were heartbreakers on the road. Pitts, obviously, they had played Penn State a 17-10 ball game right before they had knocked off you guys on that, I guess, last-second version of the Philly Special, if you will. And I know you were there for that one, so we'll talk a little bit more about it. And then also that game at Cincinnati obviously came down to the wire as well. So when you take a look at those games, I guess one of the common denominators was the Knights turned the ball over. I know Dylan Gabriel, he's done some excellent things, but in those two games he had a combined 5 interceptions.
Yeah, and this is the thing to remember. He is still a true freshman quarterback. And in those two games, he played like a freshman quarterback, much more in the Cincinnati game, I thought, than in the Pittsburgh game. What has been tough for the Knights with Dylan having those struggles is in both those games, the offensive line has not played as well as they should have. Both teams put very aggressive schemes up against the Knights' offensive line. They did not react to it well. And so it's a lot to put on the shoulders of a freshman quarterback if the protection isn't there and the running game also getting shut down as well.
And so around Dylan Gabriel, I mean, first, before we take a look at the skill positions, let's just talk a little bit about that, the decision going back several weeks now to play Dylan Gabriel instead of obviously coming into the season. A lot of folks Brandon Wimbush was the guy and then made the decision to go with true freshman Dylan Gabriel. So tell us a little bit about that decision.
Sure. You know, Brandon Wimbush, they thought his experience in being a senior leader would be the difference. But Dylan Gabriel impressed a lot of folks in camp. Of course, Daryl Mack, who had taken over for McGinsey Milton last year, was also in that mix before he got hurt in the offseason. And then Kadri Jones, the four-string quarterback, is also a talented player. He's not at the level of the other guys, but they have a pretty deep quarterback room. And as Dylan Gabriel continued to impress in the first game against Florida A&M, he got in early, as Coach Josh Heupel said he would, want to get him some snaps. And he outperformed Wimbush in that first game. He throws a much crisper ball. Wimbush has had accuracy struggles, well chronicled at Notre Dame as well. So the decision was made to go with the freshman, and by and large, it's been a very successful decision based on what Dylan Gabriel has done so far this season.
Now around Dylan Gabriel, and talk about some of the playmakers. Obviously, running back, you have McCray Killens, and then I'm trying to think the other name
Otis,
escapes me.
Otis Anderson, who was another one of those speed scat back types. This running back group is fast and they run hard. McCray is kind of the workhorse more often than not. They try to get Killens out in space as well as Anderson. Bentavious Thompson is also an option in the backfield. He's kind of the big thumper. And I think there's been times that UCF probably should have utilized him on some short yardage situations that they came up short in, because he probably would have been the better choice. You know, those were the those were certainly the plays that that make a difference in the ball game, and those are certainly it certainly was a tough situation, like in the Pittsburgh game where they came up short on third down and fourth down a couple of times, not using the big back.
Now, Jeff, a wide receiver, I know a guy that has really exploded over the last three games. Now, he had a good start of the season, but in the last three games, Gabriel Davis has a combined 28 receptions, and what, about 450, 500 yards. And against Cincinnati, he had 13 catches for 170 yards.
Yes, coming to an NFL roster near you next year, he will play on Sundays. He is has just been an absolute beast out there at the wide receiver position. He can catch the long ball. He makes the tough catches. He is certainly a superstar in the making. Trey Nixon, who transferred in last season from Ole Miss, he's a dynamic receiver as well. They probably need to kind of target him a little bit more because Dylan does have a tendency to focus on Gabriel Davis, and Trey Nixon can definitely give you some good receptions as well.
And along the offensive line, I know you were talking about the struggles in some of those games, I guess particularly the two losses to run the football, at least at times. So what can you tell us about the offensive line? Was that just some inconsistent play, or have any injuries been suffered, or what's the deal there?
It's been some inconsistent play, and we also lost two key leaders on the offensive line from a year ago. That has definitely been a big factor. Aaron Evans being one of those guys, and Wyatt Miller the other. They were kind of the guys who were the leaders on that offensive line. So I think they haven't really found that guy just yet. Parker Boudreau is certainly one of the key guys at the guard position. Cole Schneider also on the offensive line. And Jordan Johnson, who anchors the center of the line. Those are the guys that they rely upon. And they are having to grow probably a little bit faster because I think they're missing some of that leadership they had from last season.
It's been no secret, Jeff. I mean, East Carolina's really struggled on the offensive side of the ball, and kind of a philosophy change going from a more of a pass-heavy offense under Scotty Montgomery. And they said they wanted to run the football and never were really able to get that accomplished. And Coach Houston and his staff have, despite the struggles, really committed to the run. So tell us about the Knights defensively, and take us through each of the three levels. Tell us what they have in the front and then also on the back end.
Well, I think as far as like defending the run game, the Knights linebackers are going to be real key as far as that goes. Nate Evans, who had 17 tackles in the Cincinnati game, he just flies and finds his way to the ball carriers. He is terrific running down guys in space. And Eric Gilliard is also a big factor there for the Knights. Gilliard is a sophomore out of Jacksonville, and he's one of those key leaders in that. As far as the D-line is concerned, they rotate a lot of guys through there. So they're rotating four guys in and out of the game quite a bit. So they are definitely – Cam Good leads that. He's a redshirt freshman. He's one of the top defensive linemen for UCF, as well as Anthony Montalvo, who just got a scholarship that was awarded this week. He's been giving the Knights a lot of good minutes in the D-line. And then in the secondary, Richie Grant is a top flight safety. He looks like he's going to be NFL caliber playing Sundays in the league. He's the leader back there. We lost Bam Moore, who was a top cover corner, but Neville Clark has helped pick up the slack on the other side. He's got a couple of interceptions on the season. And Tay Gowan, who took over for Bam Moore, has accounted for himself very, very well as far as playing pass defense in the secondary.
Jeff, it's Kyle. I'm just now joining the call, so if this has been touched on, I apologize. What is the attitude like down there right now, coming off of an off week, UCF losing their first conference game in a couple of years at Cincinnati? I would imagine you guys are going to be a pretty fired-up football team to get back to your winning ways and your dominance of the American this weekend.
Yeah, we did cover that a little bit, but I would also kind of follow up onto that as, certainly the disappointment is there, but the Knights still have an opportunity to have a 10-win season. So they still have lots in front of them. The bye week came at a good time. And I think what we'll also see from this UCF team is one thing I can tell you is that having been a Knight fan for all 40 years of their existence, that the last two seasons, these UCF Knights have had some of the biggest heart of any teams I've ever seen in college football. And I think they're going to have to rely on that heart and fortitude to see where they go from here after suffering their first regular season loss and then their first conference loss in such a very long time. So I think that is, again, a chance to play for things that are in front of them. They can get to 10 wins. You never know. They could slide into the AAC championship game in the East, provided you know they get help elsewhere. But they certainly have business to take care of in front of them.
Yeah, I saw something the other day that had UCF listed as one of the most disappointing teams in college football this year. And I said, man alive, I wish East Carolina could get back to the point where a potential 10-win season would be disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things I mentioned to the guys earlier. You know, a lot of the late bandwagon fans that are just being overly critical. There's a lot of positives to this season. We have found a long-term answer at quarterback in Dylan Gabriel. So there are lots of things that you can take from UCF this season that are certainly worth fighting for. Yeah, now Josh Heupel has kind of come under fire a little bit for play calling. I would tend to be a little critical of him in those times. He has installed more of his offense this season. Last season, it was kind of a hybrid of the Scott Frost offense and his offense, tailoring it around Mackenzie Milton. And Mackenzie Milton was a special player and can make things out of plays that when they went bad. So, you know, Dylan Gabriel doesn't have that experience yet. I kind of thought in the Cincinnati game it might have been good to let Darryl Mack have a series or two just because he's a better runner and maybe kind of loosen things up a little bit, let the freshman take a little breath, see things from the sidelines. But you know, he's a dynamic talent, and it's going to be great to see what he does in the years to come.
Yeah, both Cincinnati and Pittsburgh are pretty good football teams, and you barely lost both games.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you lose by a combined 4 points in two games, you know, and now UCF is kind of a Super Bowl for teams out there. Pittsburgh certainly wanted a piece of it after getting embarrassed here at Spectrum Stadium last season. They certainly had it circled on the calendar, and, you know, they put out a commemorative T-shirt after beating UCF called the Pitt Special. So, and the way they reacted when I was there at the stadium, you could see they were like in championship mode. You know, and Cincinnati certainly had had revenge on their minds after losing here last season when ESPN's College Game Day was here and we got the primetime slot on ABC. So, yeah, the Knights are now definitely the hunted, and people are wanting to put that medal on their wall for beating UCF.
So, Jeff, in addition to your coverage for UCF, you obviously do the AAC report and do an excellent job with that. And so taking a look at the big picture, we're talking about the East Division race. As I look at the schedule, and you guys, I would say out of your final six games, that the two most difficult challenges are going to Temple on the 26th of October. And then also on November 23rd, you guys have to go and take on a very talented and a Tulane team that's playing very well under Willie Fritz. And then you look at Cincinnati, they still this East Division race is probably going to come down to the wire. And then you have Cincinnati hosting Temple and then traveling to Memphis on the 29th of November. So those last 2 weeks of the season, those are probably the two most challenging games left for the Bearcats.
Oh, no doubt about it. And yeah, Temple has served notice by beating Memphis this past weekend that they are going to be heard from in this race. And Rod Carey has, you know, he inherited a pretty good football team, and he's a really good football coach. He has gotten that team to buy into his presence immediately, and, you know, they have that that tough, tenacious defense. They like to run the football, and they're gonna try to pull you into their game and make it a slugfest. So, you know, and that's going to be an interesting matchup when they play SMU this weekend. So what I'm finding in the AAC is there are a lot of really good teams in this conference. And that is, you know, it could be something that works against the conference as far as trying to get a New Year's Six Bowl, because if they all beat up on each other, they might take each other out of the equation. But I think you'd rather have a lot of really good teams and have a strong conference than just have one team carrying the banner the whole way.
No, absolutely. And speaking of the depth, when you look at the West Division of the American, you got SMU kind of leading the way right now. Memphis, as you said, got upset by Temple, turned the ball over several times. Navy's as good as anybody. Tulane is good on all three sides of the ball. I mean, Houston, you can't sleep on them. The West Division is pretty loaded over there. Who do you think is going to come out of that side as the division champion?
Boy, it is stacked. But I would have to say I'm gonna go with SMU. I think they are the hot team, and they do have a terrific offense. Shane Bichelle at the quarterback position. You know, Sonny Dykes is an outstanding football coach and has proven that over the years. And but it's going to be, I think it will be SMU. Shane Bichelle at the quarterback position is doing an outstanding job there. They have a talented offense. Sonny Dykes has proven to be a very good head coach over the years. But it's a hard pick. It really is. I mean, as you said, the West is deep and it is talented. I mean, I think Tulane is definitely a sleeper team that can knock you off on it.
Thanks, Jeff. He always does a great job talking UCF night football and American Athletic Conference football in general. He does a great job with his podcast, and we're always glad to have him on as a guest. And we return the favor. He has us on his podcast from time to time, and check him out for his American Athletic Conference coverage and his coverage of UCF nights, as you said, Bubba. He's on SoundCloud. He's on some other places too. The Nightline is this UCF podcast. What's this American Athletic Conference podcast name? Do you know?
It's just called the AAC Report. The easiest way to find it is just to go to SoundCloud and search for the Nightline Sports Network. And if you search for the Nightline Sports Network, you'll be able to find the AAC Report. That's part of their programs.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it, but I'm sure he does a good job. Jeff's a very very knowledgeable person, and he doesn't come across as a homer. So I haven't listened to it. I would manage it. It's a quality program.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We want to go ahead and go to our other guest, and then our other UCF guest, that is. We had the opportunity to catch up with Jason Beatty. He's UCF Steven Igo, if you will, in terms of the fact that he's with 24/7 Sports. And let's go to Jason Beatty of Knights 24/7 right now.
Well, we continue with our preview for East Carolina traveling down to UCF, and one of our original guests back in the preview days of 2018, Bubba, he's back.
Yeah, a guy that we've caught up with, I guess, probably for all three sports, at least football and men's basketball, and that is Jason Beatty from Knights 24/7. Jason, welcome in.
It's good to be back.
It's hard to believe that Jason, we're in the middle. I was thinking about this earlier. I knew we were talking to you today. It's hard to believe that we're like in the middle of literally the football season. It seems like it should be still July, but here we are, middle of the season. And I know the Knights coming off a disappointing loss to Cincinnati, even though it's a great football team. I know you guys thought that was going to be you should win that game.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a weird feeling. You know, when they lost to Pittsburgh on the road, it was, okay, it's a conference game. It's a non-conference game at the time. But when you lose the conference opponent for the first time in two seasons, a team like Cincinnati that you've beaten, you know, it really felt like a revenge game for the Bearcats. You know, just it was a weird loss. They didn't look like themselves. I don't know if you guys watched the game or not, but UCF just fell flat on the road.
I know with UCF, as far as the Knights are concerned, how much pressure now is on when you have Josh Heupel, when you have a coach, and is the pressure down that you have two losses? I don't think there should be, but is there some of the fan base that think maybe this is a disappointing season?
It's hard to say. I don't think there's disappointment quite yet because there's still plenty of football left to play, right? But I think there's a growing sense of frustration with Josh Heupel and his play calling. You look at some of the previous plays towards the end of the game against Cincinnati and just kind of these past two, you look at the two losses and how just UCF started slow and that's not really usual for them. And, you know, some of that defense is beginning to figure out UCF, but some of that is some of the play calling and the mistakes made on the field and the penalties setting them back. I think there's early frustration from fans. Like, I mean, you know, it's a weird position for this fan base. They haven't lost a game before this season at the Fiesta Bowl. The regular season loss is a weird thing for UCF fans the last couple of seasons. I think, you know, anytime you don't win your conference championship, especially for a program that has the past two seasons, that's a disappointment. And right now it's, you know, it was, you go undefeated, you run the table, and you're in the conference championship game. And now for UCF to even get the chance to winning the third straight, they have to have some help. Not only is there pressure to win out, you have to win every single game now. You need help to reach the conference championship game to even get a shot. So I think it's, of course it's disappointing to lose games, but I don't think there's a sense of disappointment on the entire season being a loss just yet. You know, obviously goals are set high at UCF, like any program should. But I think it's just some sort of frustration and maybe even some confusion among the fan base right now.
Perhaps maybe some of your fan base. Obviously, the fan base has been around for a long time. You guys, this is a couple of seasons ago, went 0-12. So, I mean, you can't expect to go undefeated every year. And, you know, Heupel doesn't have Mackenzie Milton. And, you know, Cincinnati's a pretty good football team. Pitt's a pretty good football team. So I'm glad to hear most fans seem to not be ready to jump off the bandwagon just yet, because I think realistically you guys stand a good chance to go 10-2.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, there's frustration in every fan base. You can't please everyone, right? I think majority of the fans still realize that, right? Just like you said, it's hard to win all your football games during the regular season. And you look at the two losses; they're not, you know, 1 point loss to Pitt and 3 point loss to Cincinnati, and that's the Cincinnati game. They should not have been in from the start like that, the way they started on the road there for both games. I think most fans, you know, obviously there have been darker days at UCF, right? 2015, 0-12, and they've gone 0-12 before then. They've had, I would say, tougher losses. The Fiesta Bowl was a tough loss. You know, losing on the road to a good Cincinnati team, you know, I think plenty of fans are still going to show out Saturday night, right? It's homecoming. It's a big home game to, you know, just bounce back a little bit. And I think fans are still going to show support. Even after the Pittsburgh game, the game against UConn September 28th was sold out. So I don't think fans are jumping ship just yet.
Jason, when you think of UCF, you think of explosive offense, and that's certainly been the case. And you have Dylan Gabriel, who took over very early in the season at quarterback instead of Brandon Wimbush. He's obviously also a native of Hawaii, just like Mackenzie Milton. And so he has an unbelievable amount of playmakers to get the ball to. And I saw a stat the other day that was very impressive, that the Knights have something like 46 plays of 20 or 25 yards or more.
Yeah, no, they love going down the field. They love doing it quickly. You look at some of these games with Dylan Gabriel, I mean, he throws the deep ball like no one else. I mean, he really is impressive. But at the same time, he's also a freshman. You look at some of the mistakes his team's made. I mean, obviously Mackenzie Milton's a special player, but I don't think he makes those mistakes. And Dylan is still learning, right? He's only... This time last year, he was in high school, playing high school ball. He went to the same high school as Mackenzie Milton, so, you know, he understands the expectations of playing at a high-level football. Otherwise, UCF wouldn't have recruited him. But they're still, you know, they've scored 40 or more points majority of their past 32 games. 19 of the last 32 games, they've scored 40 or more points. You know, they were held for the first time below 30 in 31 games against Cincinnati. You know, it's weird for them not to score a lot of points, and it's weird for them not to do it in a short amount of time. You know, if you look at time of possession, they rank 120th out of 130 teams in the country, but they're averaging, 45 points a game almost. They're just a really explosive team, and, you know, even though Dylan Gabriel is a freshman, you know, he's still handing the ball off to Adrian Killens, to Greg McCray, to Otis Anderson. Gabe Davis is one of the best wide receivers in this conference. You know, regardless of who's at quarterback, the weapons are there for this offense.
Moving on to the defensive side of the ball, tell us a little bit about what Pirate fans can expect out of the Knights on that side.
Yeah, so like I was saying, you know, the defensive line entering this season is one of the biggest questions. UCF lost a lot of their leaders on defense. Pat Jasinski, Titus Davis, Tristan Hill went early in the NFL draft. Plays for the Dallas Cowboys now. Some of those guys that have stepped up in that leadership position Nate Evans, I think he had 17 or 18 tackles against Cincinnati. That was a career high for him. Brandon Hayes has been a force on the defensive line there. You know, Cam Good is a transfer from Virginia Tech. He's immediately eligible this season. He earned his eligibility before the year started, and he's just been a force to reckon with. You know, defensive back-wise, Richie Grant was on a number of watch lists entering the season, being one of the best defensive backs this in college football this season. You know, another guy who's been who's forced a lot of turnovers is Tay Gowan. He's got 3 turnovers, 2 interceptions. He's a JUCO transfer, came right in. He's just really been thriving under this UCF system with Brandy Shannon. This defense, really, last season it was end, don't break, and it feels like that's where we are again a little bit. And it feels like the defense actually has picked up the slack of where the offense might have struggled. This team overall has done really well closing out strong in the second half. You look at some of their games where they were down a lot of points and the defense kind of picked up where they had to, and the offense started to roll in the second half. The defense can force turnovers. You know, in the first game of the season they didn't force a turnover, but every game since they've had at least 1 or 2. Against UConn they forced 4 different turnovers in week 5, so it's still a really good defense with a lot of playmakers.
Jason, I was going to ask about special teams. Some people call that the third side of the ball, if you will, the third team, if you will. You have offense, defense, and special teams. How are the special teams this year for UCF?
Yeah, that's probably the weakest phase of the UCF team as a whole. You know, the offense is fast, the defense is pretty strong. The special teams, you know, they lost Matthew Wright, who set just about every kicking record at UCF. They lost Mac Loudermilk, who's just an awesome character on the team and a really good punter. They had to regroup, recruit some guys. The kicker now is Dylan Barnes, and he's actually improved since last season. It has impressed me personally. He's 8 of 9 through 6 games as a starter. I mean, he didn't see any time on the field when Matthew Wright was here. Kickoff is a freshman from Arizona, Daniel Barsky. He's done pretty well. The first couple games, he's kicked the ball out of bounds. Like, it's guaranteed he's going to kick the ball out of bounds. Sometimes it just feels like that. But once he settles down and starts doing some more kickoffs throughout the game, he really does settle down. He's got a really big leg. Punter, like I said, you know, Mac Loudermilk was the punter the past couple of seasons. Andrew Osteen's a redshirt freshman, but he wasn't playing at all last year. The punt unit has done all right. You know, they've had a couple punts that were blocked against Cincinnati. I think was one of them was returned for a touchdown. You know, special teams is definitely the weakest unit on the squad right now. You know, they still have a dangerous kick returner in Adrian Killens. Punt return-wise, Ben Otis Anderson, he had a punt return for a touchdown against Pittsburgh. But if you look at all 3 phases of this team, the special teams really has, you know, not been up to the UCF standard compared to the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, and I'm sure they've been working on that during the off week. I mean, that's good. During the off week, you can fix things like that. So probably a good time to touch up things on special teams.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I think Dylan Barnes, like I mentioned before, he's 8 of 9 on the season. I think he's impressed a lot of fans. I don't think a lot of fans knew who he was because of Matthew Wright just doing so well the last couple seasons. And I think, you know, for the first time in a while, UCF has had to worry about what's going to happen on this punt or what's going to happen. Is this kickoff going to go out of bounds? You know, that's something they've improved on every week, though.
No doubt about it. And I know looking ahead for the second half of the season, I know the coaches and players won't be, but after East Carolina, I know you've got games with Temple and Tulane, two of the best teams in the league.
Yeah, this team has yet to win out of the state of Florida. You know, their only other road game was against FAU, so they lost to Pittsburgh and they lost to Cincinnati, obviously. I want to see this team you know, win outside the state of Florida. Temple's going to be a tough one. Like you mentioned, Temple and Tulane. You know, Tulane's second the week before the war in I-4 against South Florida. I don't think that's something that they should overlook. You know, it's a tough road game. it's going to be interesting to see how Dylan Gabriel reacts to that atmosphere, the road game atmosphere. I mean, Spectrum Stadium's a loud stadium when it's, you know, fully packed, but, you know, reacting to road losses can be tough. You know, they've been really good at home, obviously. They have, even though they've lost a couple of these games, they haven't lost at home just yet. That's when things might fall apart a little bit. But until that point, I mean, you don't want to look ahead, right? You want to take advantage and take care of business this weekend against ECU. But I know in the back of their minds they got, you know, a big game next week at Temple.
Well, obviously, Jason, we want East Carolina to win. It's going to be a tough one, but certainly I know with UCF, they're probably going to be licking their chops after that close loss with Cincinnati. And good luck to the Knights the rest of the season. We definitely appreciate you coming on and look forward to talking to you with basketball season.
Absolutely. It's right around the corner.
Thank you, Jason. Always a good job to hear from him talking about his UCF Knights. Obviously very very passionate about his Knights. And, you know, it sounds like maybe some of the fans are being a little unrealistic there. You know, one thing he said, Bubba, kind of struck me, is he said, hopefully we'll still have a full house there this Saturday. I was like, man, alive. If people are already jumping off the bandwagon because you lost to Cincinnati and Pitt and you're not going to go undefeated three straight years, then you don't even deserve the success you've had.
Right. A couple plays from being undefeated. And yep. Like you said, who knows? I mean, it would not shock me to see them go 11-3 or 12-2 this year. So
no, it wouldn't either.
So with the success they've had, it's easy to say that. I'm sure if we'd had the success that they've had over the last three seasons that we'd have some fans that were acting that way as well, but hopefully it would be minimal.
Yeah, there's always Captain Bills out there for sure. Bubba, what else we got, man? We had another gift, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We actually had Dale Steele. He's actually the director of football administration for East Carolina, and let's go to Dale right now. Well, our next guest we've been waiting to have on, being the new administration with Coach Houston, and Bubba, he's no stranger to Greenville or East Carolina.
No, he's definitely not. I mean, much is made of Coach Shank and Donnie Kirkpatrick coming back multiple times at East Carolina, and this is his third stint with the Pirates. He had served on Bill Lewis' staff, Steve Logan's staff, and then also under Ruffin McNeil. Welcome into the show, Director of Football Administration for East Carolina, Dale Steele.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. It's always exciting to talk about East Carolina football, and my wife and I are really excited to be back here in Greenville.
Coach, we're very excited to have you back. It seems like that after it's like a pirate ship. I know everybody uses analogies, but there's been like such a – we're recording this. It's actually raining, so it's perfect to be a pirate and rain and ships and all that. But it's so great to have you all back because I think that after what's happened the previous few seasons, it's good to have familiar faces and people that know what it means to be a pirate and certainly knows how big and how special this program really is.
Well, East Carolina is a special place, and East Carolina football is very special also. But I think Eastern North Carolina is a special place. Eastern North Carolina is a place. I grew up in Alabama, and you know, it's one of those places where that hard work and you know, having a blue collar, and I say that with all pride, work ethic of going to work every day and doing your job and taking pride in where you are and who you are and achieving you know, goals based upon your hard work and the process of going to work day to day and bringing your lunch pail is a special place. It really is, especially in today's society, and we're excited to be back here.
Coach, you've seen success at East Carolina accomplished in different ways under Bill Lewis. Obviously, that 11-1 season in 1991, number 9 in the nation. Then you were part of building a program under Steve Logan after a lot of departures after Coach Lewis's tenure. And then you were a part of, I guess, Coach Ruffin's staff as a director of football administration. You're the same role that you're currently in on Coach Houston's staff, and 23 wins in the last three seasons under Coach Ruff. So you've seen it accomplished in different ways. And then talk a little bit about Coach Houston and how you developed a relationship with him, because I know you served as director of football administration for JMU prior to coming back to Greenville.
Well, I had known about Coach Houston for quite some time. You know, he was a successful high school coach and over in Nashville. And, you know, we'd been by there recruiting. And then he went to Lenoir Ryan and Brevard and had had success there. And he's a close friend of Bob Trott. And Bob Trott and I were friends for years and years and years, going back to when Bob was at Clemson and I was here, and we recruited the same areas. And then Bob worked with us at Baylor University when my brother was head coach out there. So I got to know Mike through those channels, and you know, he's a terrific football coach, but he's even a better person, and more importantly, he's a great fit for this job. You know, you mentioned the fact that I had that I've been here under, you know, this will be my fourth coach that I've been under here, actually my fifth, counting Steve, and each one of them had a personality that fit this place and this particular situation. As I said before, I think East Carolina is very special, and I think the people that come here and are successful have a special, you know, character trait about them, that they believe in hard work, and that they, you know, go about the process, and that they care about people, and that they care about this community, and they care about doing it a certain way, the right way. Of course, that's one of the things the coach does. He's a strong believer in players and developing relationships, and he's a very strong believer in having a plan, and he's a detail guy. You know, much like Bill and Steve were, he's a detail guy that puts a lot of detail into making sure that the standard is met in all phases of their life, and they have a championship lifestyle, and that's very successful here at East Carolina.
Coach, I wanted to talk about the very fact. It seems like that, not only set a plan, but it looks like he has a vision. It's like already you guys, I know you recruited a recruiting coordinator here in the past, and I've just been impressed with, and I will say this not because you're on the line, I tell people on the street here in Greenville how proud I am as far as the recruiting goes. It seems like all the way down to the dot and the I's and crosses and the T's, I know that's a cliche, but it seems like, Coach, there's like a vision. He knows where you guys are going, and that's easier to work for, I would imagine, as a coach than someone who maybe doesn't have a plan or doesn't have a clear vision of where we're going.
Well, I think anything, whether it be coaching or anything else that you do in life, you have to have a goal in mind, and then you have to have a process in place to get you where you want to get to that goal, and a plan to get you to where you want to get to that goal. And certainly, you know, Coach has that vision of where he sees East Carolina football being. And, you know, where he sees it being is, you know, I've been in four or five different regimes here. But, you know, the end product is to be successful in building these young men into great people and competing in football in a certain way here. And Coach knows what he wants. He has that standard. He says all the time the standard is the standard. And the standard is the standard. And he then puts into place a plan to reach that standard and a process to get to that standard, knowing that, you know, it's going to take, you know, it's going to take some time. With each job that he's had, you know, the process was the same and built on hard work and built on those character traits and those things that he envisions a person needs to have success. And they're certainly the things that have brought us great success as a staff over the last 4 years.
Coach Steele, on your role as director of football administration, tell folks a little bit about that. I know, obviously, Division I football program, you have a lot of moving parts, and there's an awful lot that needs to be accomplished. So tell folks about your day-to-day role and everything that entails.
Well, when I first started, you know, some 40 years ago, or 39 years ago, I think it was now, when you were hired on the staff, when I was first hired on the staff here, each one of us had a specific group of auxiliary duties that we did. For example, my first job here under Bill Lewis was I was in charge of the equipment room and in charge of the practice fields and in charge of two or three other things, recruiting. So at that time, you had to split your time between being a football coach, recruiting, and doing those auxiliary duties and following up on those auxiliary duties to make sure that those things were done daily. You know, for example, a coach on our staff might have had travel, or he might have had, you know, senior day, or he might have had some other auxiliary duties. You always had your football duties, and you had off-the-field duties. As football has progressed and it's become a big business, a bigger business, then what has occurred is there's been a shift to the off-the-field items that need to be taken care of have kind of been given to other folks. And we have a tremendous support staff here. J.P. Gunner, you mentioned recruiting, who Coach brought in as a recruiting coordinator, has just done a tremendous job of organizing and staying on top of that. And he focuses on that, and he concentrates on that. Nina Ballone, who does our director of operations, she, you know, she focuses on a lot of day-to-day things and the nuts and bolts that go on here. Teron Williams, who does our, you know, player development. All of those people have people that work under them, and they focus on those areas. Therefore, you're able to be much more specific in getting those things done and taking care of those items and doing them the right way and doing them in a championship method. And, you know, I've got things that I take care of, and then I kind of pull all of it together as I deal with things here, because I've been here before. I know, you know, where to go and how this university functions and the people involved in it and what this university stands for. And we just kind of all work together to try to pull it all together so that the coaches and the players don't have the distraction of worrying about off-the-field issues. And they're able to focus on their classwork, being the best football player they can be, getting in the weight program. You know, when we take care of making sure that we know how everything else is going to function, how we're going to travel, the recruiting portion that JP does, the helping the kids with their financial aid and all the other things that Teron does. So it takes a lot of people nowadays to run a football program, and that's what we do in this area. We try to make sure that we take care of as many things as we can and keep East Carolina moving forward in a first-class manner, in the championship manner that we all expect it to be.
And, Coach, that's the one thing that I'm really proud of is the very fact when Coach Houston came in here, it seems like now it's a brand new day. I tell people in 2019, huge difference all the way on to, you can tell that the way the things are handled off the field matches what's on the field now, where I'm sure things were done well, or I don't know that for 100%, but it's now, you can see it translating now. The product on the field has been amazing. I know we're a few days away from the UCF game, but just really proud of, in just a short period of time, how this program has gone from where we're not competitive, we're competitive, where now, I was talking about that last week with folks, how now they said, why are you so excited? I said, now where we can watch a football game and we're in the game for all four quarters, where we may lose the game, but we're competing at the highest level. And then when you look at the recruiting that's coming behind all the guys that we currently have, I think the future is very bright for the program.
Well, I think when you look at it, you know, again, I say having some experience here, when you look at each regime that I've been under here, there was a process that occurred. When we came here with Bill, I think we were 5-5-1 the first year. When we started out with Steve, we had a lull after the Peach Bowl, and we came back. But there's a process that occurs that, you know, you want to get better every day, and you want to see, you know, improvement each and every day out of each and every player here and out of each and every person that comes in contact with our players. And, again, that goes back to Coach's, you know, championship lifestyle and the plan that he has and the preparation, because everybody that touches our players is expected to live up to that standard. To do things the right way, to be on time, to have a good work ethic, to be unselfish, to be disciplined and do the things that we don't necessarily like to do. And when that starts to occur with a group of young people, what happens is that takes hold. And that when that takes hold, then it becomes a way of life. And that's what we talk about, a championship lifestyle. And then if you can see small steps occur each day, that gives you an idea of where you're headed. Again, I go back to the fact that coach knows where he wants it to go. The staff knows where they want it to go. John Gilbert knows where he wants it to go. And now each and every day we have to put those pieces into place and keep working to get those pieces all together, pulling in the same direction. And that's when you have, you know, when you get back to where I'm used to East Carolina football being at a championship caliber where you're winning and you're attending bowl games and, you know, attendance is high and people are positive about the university and the athletic program.
Coach, in addition to your decade or so that you spent in Greenville, and like you said, you'd also been at James Madison with Coach Houston, you've been at Baylor, Kansas State, and Tulane, Wisconsin, to name a few. So talk a little bit about your other experiences in coaching and maybe some of the favorite memories you have outside of your time at East Carolina.
Well, I think, you know, obviously, you know, I started a program at Campbell University, and that's a fond memory. Just being able to begin a program now and to see it progress and to see it, you know, becoming a strong Division I program. And I think they're 5-1 this year. And that's another example of a process. When we started in 2006 without a building or with one football and one helmet, you know, even after I'm, you know, not there anymore, they're continuing to move forward because we all knew where we wanted it to go. We knew what the plan was. We knew that it was going to be a process, and I think that's a fond memory. You know, working for my brother at Baylor has been a fond memory, and, you know, we've had some of the greatest memories being here, but being in the different parts of the country and finding out that you know, there's a commonality about the game of football, and it brings people together, whether you're at Wisconsin or whether you're at Kansas State or whether you're at Tulane. It brings people together. It brings alumni together, and it gives people hope and pride, and that's the great thing about the game. It gives people a work ethic.
Coach, I know that when you beat me to it talking about Campbell, I was really impressed with what you did there. How far do you think, I can't say a timetable, but I know things are progressing the right way, but don't you think with where the program was, it's going to take a few years to really be at the level, the expectation that coach has?
Yeah, we you know, we're going to go through a process here, and there is no timetable on it because
right.
you just don't know how quickly it's going to move and how quickly, but we've made great strides so far, and I think that, you know, for us to be where that we would all like for it to be, you're looking at a process of, you know, a couple of years of, you know, getting the recruits in here and building the recruits. But each time, and when I say a couple of years, I say you're getting better for each one of those. But obviously the end result is, you know, championships and bowl games and, you know, being in those places. You've got to have mature football teams to do that. And mature football teams that play to the standard that you know, coach wants them to play at. And so it's just going to be a continual process for us. And we're going to have to take it one step at a time. And you never know when that all of a sudden it's going to kick in. I recall a game that we played my first year here in 1989. And I think when it really kicked in that our guys understood what we were trying to teach them under Coach Lewis about how to play the game was not until the Northern Illinois game, which was the last game of the season. And it was a very highly contested game, which we won late in the game. And that personality became part of our program at East Carolina for the next few years because as we reached the 1991 season, we were still a team that never felt like we were out of a game. And I attribute it back to that Northern Illinois game that first year. And that's when the light bulb came on, and it just everybody understood everything they were doing. There was validity to what you were being asked to do, and that's happening here every day. You talk about the improvement on the field. The guys are seeing the validity and lifting weights and doing things right and reaching the standard that coach and the staff are asking them to. And so it's when that really takes over, and it just keeps moving forward, and all of a sudden it just snowballs.
Coach, thank you so much for coming on. I hope we can get you back in the wintertime after the first season. And I know there's a lot to wrap up season here in a little bit, but thank you so much for coming on. It's a huge honor to have you on. And thank you for coming back to Greenville. We love having y'all back.
Well, we appreciate it, and it's an honor for us to be a part of talking about East Carolina football, and we appreciate all you guys do to support the program.
Thank you very much to Dale Steele. I tell you what, I was really impressed with him. I've always liked him, and the great thing about – I'm glad we had him as a third guest because I wanted to just talk about – I felt like if you hear that interview, obviously you have if you're at this point of the podcast, but when you hear that interview – it just reminds you of the greats that we've had. And what I mean by that is the coaching. And we've got tremendous talent coaching now that we haven't had. I'm sorry, I'll be honest. Until maybe you could argue last year, there was some talent there, the coaching. So I think when you have Dale Steele back as a perfect example of a guy who, as he talked about there, started the Campbell program after a 50-year hiatus from not having football. And 2006, I want to say. And then he developed that program, as he said in the interview, one helmet and one football to now where they're 5-1, I think he said, Bubba. So it just makes me feel proud to know that we've got people, even inside the administration side of football, that have a winning attitude, the championship lifestyle that we're talking about, that he was talking about in the interview. And I just feel like that the now the culture is changing, not only with the players, but the expectations of coaches we have now where they expect to win, they know how to win, they have a plan, and the vision for this future of the program is what's been missing. And now you have it where, I mean, you feel like in the next 10, not even 10, I was going to say the next few years, 3 or 4 years, that things will be a lot better.
Yeah, absolutely. Things are headed in the right direction. I mean, you got people from winning cultures, people who have been here before. Well, we've been successful. You know, it's only a good thing. Winning breeds winning. Guys that, you know, have winning attitudes and believe that you can win at East Carolina, like him and like Coach Shank Wilder and Donnie Kirkpatrick. And God knows Coach Hughes has been a winner everywhere he's been. So, you know, it's a good thing. And they're going to get a turnaround. And like I said, And we're 3-3 right now, boys. So it ain't like all's bad so far this year. But
it feels very strong. Of the, you know, there's a lot of times when we were talking about in the past we couldn't sell anything. But at least now, as I mentioned in the last podcast, I think we can sell hope, and that's the one thing. You see the future. You see
sell dope.
Hope, not
oh,
dope.
Oh.
No, dope is not my thing. Not selling right, dope, right, or right. I don't that's have any part of dope.
I wanted to make sure. I didn't want to send Mick messages to our listeners.
Kyle, on this podcast or any time, if you want me to pee in a cup, I'll pass it.
All right.
That's a drug test. So.
All right. Good.
I don't know if Bubba will. I'm just kidding. Yeah. I'm just kidding. Bubba will, I know for sure. There's 2 out of 3. Anyway.
Depends on the day.
Yeah. So, anyway, I feel like with now that what we've got to do is just remind ourselves of where this program, I would say that to Pirate Nation, I thought you made a good point about earlier, Kyle, about the fan base. UCF is light years ahead of us. There's no question about it. I think if somehow the Pirates won the game, which I don't think they will, we'll be talking just a second, but if they did, that's like one of the biggest upsets in college football this season, I would have to say.
In terms of the point spread, it would probably be top 20 biggest upsets in college football history.
Yeah, that's true too.
Point spread.
Yeah, I mean, anything can happen. I don't see it happening. But I agree with you when you said that earlier about how we're hoping the fans – what we need to do is we need to have our fan base not be the UCFs of the world. Sorry, Jason and Jeff, but you made that point a while ago about the very fact of how Jason Beattie earlier, we were talking to him, that they were worried about the fan base. If our fan base – if we were winning right now – you don't have to worry about, even if we lost a couple, two in a row, the fans at Dowdy Ficklin Stadium are going to show up. It's a matter of all the problems we had that were not even football related, even athletic administration related, chancellor related, a whole bunch of stuff, the perfect storm. That's why we had the numbers go down. Not only losses, but there were people sending a message that they're voting with their wallet. And
I agree.
And so... I don't think that the Pirates, what's funny too, if you look at the stats, even after all that we've been through, we still lead the conference with attendance. I just think that's hilarious. That should say a lot to East Carolina.
Are we still leading in attendance? That's surprising to me. I figured maybe UCF or Cincinnati had called us. Are you sure about that, Dave?
Yeah, I don't know how that – I mean, because I know UCF, they sold out their season ticket allotment in that place. Spectrum Stadium seats like 45,000.
Yeah,
that's what they showed.
We're probably still in the top five or six, but there's no way.
Well, they showed that on the fact. Well, I'll look again, but what we get every week from the they're still showing that, and maybe that's through 2018. But as far as ECU, even through the Montgomery years, we'll still be at the top, even if we're not there this year. And I suspect that over the next 2 years, we'll blow it out of the water. It won't even be close because we have the Fairweather fans who, and the conference who, and their team's not winning or winning, and they've made that few things. They just don't have, I just will continue to argue that we have the best fan base. We have the best of everything. And so what we just need to do is for everybody to, Kyle talks about all the time, everybody come together. There's people that are different camps still that are bitter over chancellors being pushed out, athletic directors pushed out, different things, but they need to be, if we're all Pirates, and my hope is that instead of complaining, give money, because now we have, there's a lot of us that were upset that things were not heading the right direction. Definitely give now, because we need it now more than ever, especially when you've got recruits coming in. You need to be able to sell, yeah, we're going to have an indoor practice facility. We're going to have a lot of things that, and my hope and prayer is that instead of waiting on that, we need to go ahead and put up a plan right now for that. Coach Houston asked for that. We need to go ahead. Whatever Coach Mike Houston wants, in my opinion, Coach Mike Houston gets.
Yeah, and we're gonna wrap this thing up here because my wife's gonna kill me and you, Dave, if we don't.
Okay.
Plan to go in, but I do want to say this. We asked Coach, we asked Gilbert, John Gilbert, on the podcast about the indoor practice facility, and didn't give a very good answer. I'm assuming what he meant was that's being talked about behind the scenes, and we're gonna announce details on that when we. Get things together and can make a formal announcement. And once we get some money paid more on the Southside expansion,
right.
I didn't think his answer to us was very good at all. I don't think it came across well. And I hope he's listening. That's no disrespect to you, Mr. Gilbert. Just go back and listen to your answer, and it wasn't a very good answer. And I don't mean that in a critical way. I mean that in a. I guess I do mean it. I mean it in a constructive way. That's the word I'm looking
right,
for.
Right, right. And I hope that we can hear. And my hope is in 2020. I will just say this. My expectation is to hear in 2020 that we have a plan, because it's going to take. This is what people don't realize.
I've heard from other people that there already is a plan behind the scenes, and Coach Houston and some other people. Already working on this, so you know, and there's a lot of people that know that, so and that's what I, you know, but guys,
so just go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, just say we're working on that behind the scenes. When we're ready to make a formal announcement, when all our ducks are in a row, then we will.
There you go. You guys want to give your predictions before we go?
Yes, I'll go first. I'm going to say UCF 48, East Carolina 20. Let's come out of there with no injuries. And get ready for the Bulls.
All right, Bubba, what about you? Bubba, are you
Bubba,
there?
Bubba says East Carolina 42, UCF 7.
All right, and I'll go UCF 49, East Carolina 28. That's what I'm going to go with this week. So 49-28, and we'll see how it turns out in Orlando. I believe it's the 8 o'clock kickoff on Saturday night. We'll get it'd be
it's
nice
seven
to get that
day,
win.
I believe it's 7 on CBS
7?
Sports Network, yeah.
Okay, 7. Okay, so there we go. And looking
CBS
forward
Sports
to...
Network.
Yes, indeed, and I appreciate them. And, of course, I'll be listening to Jeff Charles and everybody on the Pirate Learfield IMG College Network. I think that's right. So one of these days I'll get used to the new merger and all that stuff. So anyway, for all our great guests and for Bubba Rosenbaum and Kyle from McGrain's Barber, I am Dave Richmond for the Sports Detective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.